True Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in. As you know, I normally don't do guests, and I certainly don't do movie stars, but in about an hour, we're going to chat for a few minutes with Nichelle Nichols. You know her? She was Lieutenant Uhura on Star Trek way back in the day. And the reason we're going to talk with her, she is one of the stars in a new movie that is out now on DVD called The Torturer. And I watched it a couple of weeks ago, and I must say, if you can watch this and not get a feeling of claustrophobia, a sense of what it must be like for people whom the United States decides to torture, then take your pulse or go back to watching Fox News Channel. We'll talk with her about 10 p.m. Eastern tonight, which is about an hour, okay? according to the Washington Post today, it's an unannounced move, but the president, that would be Barack Obama, is sending an additional 13,000 U.S. troops to Afghanistan beyond the 21,000 he announced publicly in March. No, this is not part of what McChrystal wants. The additional troops are primarily support forces like engineers, medical personnel, intelligence experts, military police, according to the Washington Post, which would bring the total buildup that Barack Obama has approved for this horrendous expeditionary insanity in Afghanistan to 34,000. That's how many people Barack Obama is now responsible for over there. A defense official familiar with the troop approval process told the Washington Post, quote, "Obama authorized the whole thing. The only thing you saw announced in a press release was the 21,000, end quote. The report, which was posted at the newspaper's website late last night, comes, of course, as Obama is trying to decide about whether or not to send additional combat training and support troops that the assassin Stanley McChrystal wants. That would be 40,000 more, which would bring the total then up to, well, you can do the math. According to the Post, major deployments of support troops have not been publicized by the Pentagon and the White House in the past. It's been done before. I mean, Obama's not the first to do it. When former President Bush announced a U.S. troop increase in Iraq, he only mentioned 20,000 combat troops. Remember the surge? And not the accompanying 8,000 support troops. In other words, Barack Obama and his Defense Department is following exactly what George W. Bush and his Defense Department did. You understand that? Okay. The Post went on to say the troop increase approved by Obama brought the level of U.S. forces deployed in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars to a total greater than during the peak of the surge in Iraq in late 2007 and early 2008. You know, I mentioned this not to join the pissy critics from Fox News and the right wing, but to level as much criticism as I can against a president who I voted for in the mistaken belief, apparently mistaken belief, that he was interested in ending our involvement in Afghanistan, ending our involvement in Iraq, and doing so as rapidly as possible. Okay, I know. He's only been in office 10 months, right? Okay, all right, okay. But there has been, as far as I can see, and I certainly am not privy to any executive branch information that's going on between Obama and Gates, or the defense establishment, the military defense establishment. Not a bit, nor is anyone else. I don't care what you hear from these crazy people on the right. But as an observer, as just an American watching this stuff, this is not what I wanted. Certainly, it's not what I voted for. And it's a shame to see this happen. Oh, by the way, as where is it? Our military affairs correspondent sent us a couple of things today. One of them is the fact that the Pentagon has announced that they have had a more successful year in 2009 than they have had since 1973. Huh? Where is it? Oh, here it is. Recruiting last year, according to the Pentagon, was the best since 1973. The Pentagon's personnel chief said today the military has completed best recruiting year since 1973, meeting all its goals and bringing in a better educated group of young people to have brain damaged and spiritually damaged and psychologically damaged and dead. The Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps met goals for active duty and reserve recruiting during the budget year ended September 30th, the first time that's happened since the all-volunteer force was established. Why do you think that is? Why do you think they're doing so well? Could it be there are no jobs available out here in the civilian world? Well, being the absolute anti-imperialist and pacifist that I am, that's disturbing because it means there will be no attempt to subdue the out-of-control military-industrial establishment in this country. There will be no attempt to end American imperialism and warmongering. That's what it is. Come on. I realize that term was beat to death by the Soviets. I understand. You know, screw the Soviets. They had Soviet imperialism. Okay? We have American imperialism. I don't give a goddamn who's doing the imperialism. The British did it. The French did it. The Dutch did it. The Spanish did it. Okay? So we're doing it. So don't get your knickers in a wad just because you hear somebody say American imperialism. That's exactly what it is. Exactly. This is not a game. This isn't beanbag. So there'll be no effort, apparently, to stifle or foreshorten these crazy attempts to keep alive American military presence all around the globe. Nothing. And therefore, there will be no draft. And since there's no draft, there will be no protest. And since there's no protest, it'll just continue. Okay. Gary in Utah writes, Mike, thanks for the clear explanation on your program last night concerning the grotesque and obscene scams the so-called health insurers are running and hope to continue to run on the people of our nation. Just last week, I had to fend off a coworker who has completely swallowed the right-wing corporate propaganda being shoveled out by these greedy profiteers. I'm so damn tired of having to explain the facts to people who have had their brains sucked out, as you say, by Fox News. Anyway, today I read in the Huffington Post an article by Donald Cohen in which he explains why health insurance companies don't want competition. They don't want a public option. With Medicare, the amount taken from premiums is about 3%, whereas in these for-profit companies, they consume about 20% of the premium in overhead and profits. In his article, Cohen states that the top seven for-profit health insurers made a combined profit in 2007 of $12.6 billion, an increase of 170% from 2003, the same year. 2007, the average CEO compensation package for these health insurance companies was $14 million. Pay packages ranged from $3.7 million to $25.8 million. Of course, it's all about the money and how to continue stealing it from sick people and everyone else. This should be obvious to anyone who could do the simplest math. Thanks again. It's sure great to hear some truth on the airwaves. Gary in Payson, Utah. Thanks, Gary. Oh, man. How would you like to be in the death and dying business and make $25 million a year, huh? How would you like that?
here, right now, Mike Malloy.
This portion of the Mike Malloy program is brought to you by It's Up to Us Alone, featuring Ed Asner. Go to usalone.com for information on where to hear the debut of this dramatic new radio play in your area. I got this today. It's a blurb from talkingpointsmemo.com regarding that report that the insurance lobbyists blasted all over media yesterday, the report put together by PricewaterhouseCooper. From Talking Points Memo, these couple of sentences, it looks like PricewaterhouseCooper has admitted that the controversial report they released yesterday is accurate in as much as it analyzed only those provisions that would have the effect of increasing health insurance costs without factoring in the countervailing provisions that would decrease those costs. It's a bit like noting that the Red Sox scored 6 runs last night without noting that the Angels scored 7, knocking the Sox out of the postseason. End quote. These sons of bitches, these dirty, right-wing, miserable sons of bitches, even when they commission a company like PricewaterhouseCooper, analyzing businesses, analyzing war plans, analyzing product introduction, analyzing political campaign possibilities. This is what PricewaterhouseCooper does. They have a lot of people who work for them who are very bright, who work in that field economics, among other things, that attempts to calculate the upside, the downside, and then they give this information to businesses that are about to expand or come online or develop or build a factory. And the PricewaterhouseCooper report usually gives both sides and says, okay, here's your upside, here's your downside. So what did the sons of bitches from the health insurance industry do? They take the report and do not flood media with the other side. Only the part that says the health insurance scam bastards will have to increase premiums if X, Y, and Z happen. They leave out the part that says, however, premiums will drop if A, B, and C happens. Now, what do you want to bet? I haven't seen the entire report. What do you want to bet that the entire report says, however, a public option would have the net effect of driving down the cost of health insurance premiums? What do you want to bet? Jesus, I hate these people. These right-wingers, these corporate bastards, these bloodsuckers. And I also understand that the attitude inside PricewaterhouseCooper the other day was, I won't say near suicidal, but there were an awful lot of people who were walking around scratching their heads saying the full unabbreviated version of WTF when all of a sudden they start coming into work saying, did you see the news? WTF? That's not what we said. But of course, that never makes it. It's on talkingpointsmemo.com. They've got it out there. This program has it out there. I don't know. Maybe Hartman had it out. I don't know. Anybody else? It damn sure was not on network news, was it? Oh, control yourself, Christy. You got a whole program here. Maybe Shepard Smith brought it up. We have another Shepard Smith story for you tonight. This guy's days at Fox News are numbered because we're going to put something out here for you after the break in his own words, where he more or less guts a Republican pissant who is trying to say that the public option is the government takeover of health care. And Shepard Smith carves him a new body orifice while this doddering, dundering idiot, who also happens to be a physician as well as being a member of Congress, has to fall back on talking points, on Republican Party talking, but can't respond. Shepard Smith is probably skating on very thin ice because he is, oh my God, doing something that is not allowed on the Fox channel. And that is ask incisive questions and challenge the BS. Actually challenge the lies and the deception. That is not allowed on Fox channel. So we'll see how long it is before Shepard Smith winds up on CNN or MSNBC or some other channel. But his days at Fox are probably numbered. You're not allowed to be fair and balanced at Fox. That's why they have it in their name, is to divert attention from the fact that they are not. That's to let the cows and the sheep who watch their program, you know, have it force-fed into them, spoon-fed into them. Well, Marge, this is fair and balanced. Bah. Yes, it is, dear. Moo. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Coming up after the top of the hour, we're going to talk with Nichelle Nichols. You remember her? Right? Of course you do. Lieutenant Uhura in her groundbreaking role on Star Trek. I don't do stars. I don't do celebrity interviews. But she is in a film called The Torturer, and we're going to talk with her for a couple of minutes because I think it's something that people ought to see. From Prairie 2, he writes, in the ongoing spiral of the economy, gold and oil continues to go up as the dollar goes down. A prominent equity analyst has downgraded Goldman Sachs stock. Usually it's Goldman that is driving down somebody else's stock or manipulating commodity prices in order to make a killing. Goldman stands to reap a cool billion on the demise of Citibank, and taxpayers will take a bath. Small and medium companies that depend on Citi for lines of credit will also suffer. But it doesn't matter to Goldman how many companies go under. The real economy is none of their concern. Goldman has a special fund for money it has allocated for executive bonuses. So far this year, they have squirreled away $24 billion for this purpose. Bonuses. There really is money in the phony economy of financial services. Money that came right out of everybody else's pockets. The conservatives love it to talk about Obama's plans for transfer of wealth. Look around. The wealth has already been transferred. The neocons achieved one of their long-desired goals this year. All branches of the U.S. military met their annual goals for recruiting for the first time since going all-volunteer, despite two ongoing wars. We now know what level of unemployment is needed to produce cannon fodder most efficiently. Thomas Jefferson warned that one of the biggest threats to democracy was having men so poor that they would be willing to be shot. To be shot at for a shilling a day. Obama authorized 17,000 more troops for Afghanistan today, but the White House refused to characterize it as a troop increase and claims it is just a rotation. Each soldier got his shilling just the same. Prairie 2. You can go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. Beware, Jefferson said. Beware. One of the biggest threats to democracy is having men so poor they would be willing to be shot at for a shilling a day. Jesus, God. Okay. Well, as Prairie 2 points out, we now know what level of unemployment is necessary, and that's where it's pretty much going to stay then. Do you like B-movies? Our friend Bob Alexander used to produce B-movies in Hollywood, believe it or not. One of the ongoing, well, this would be an opening scene in a B-movie. A giant bug lands on a truck driver supporting or transporting intercontinental ballistic missiles. A giant bug. The truck driver swerves off the road, inadvertently kicking off Armageddon, right? All right. Well, according to Wired.com, that didn't happen when a truck driver recently lost control of a tractor trailer carrying missile parts from Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota. Here they are again. According to a statement released last Friday by Air Force Space Command, the incident was in fact caused by, quote, a large insect, end quote, that landed on the driver's back. This was the second crash of nuclear missile base vehicles in just over a year. Last July, the Air Force had to recover a truck carrying the rocket booster for an unarmed Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile after it ran off a gravel road in North Dakota. According to the AP, cleaning up after that mess cost $5.6 million. Minot Air Force Base, what's going on out there? And this latest mishap, according to Wired.com, occurred as the Air Force continues to revamp the nuclear mission. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates sacked the service's top general and senior civilian after a series of embarrassing snafus, including a 2007 bent spear incident. Remember that? Bent spear means nuclear weapons are missing. And the inadvertent export of fuses for nuclear missiles to Taiwan a year before that. The Air Force has a new command dedicated exclusively to the nuclear mission. And the 8th Air Force, which will be under the new Global Strike Command, hear that? Global Strike Command, recently finished transferring its non-nuclear bomber units to the 9th and 12th Air Forces. So the 8th Air Force now is going to be strictly nuclear. The reorganization is supposed to restore accountability to the nuclear force. Minot Air Force Base. Is there something in the weather? Remember, the Air Force has been taken over, and I realize that a lot of people say, well, now that's all changed, Mike. No, it hasn't. The Air Force has been taken over by Christian religious extremists who want to hurry the arrival of Jesus and are convinced that enough death and destruction on this planet, if the piles of corpses get high enough so that Jesus can step off a cloud and slide down on all the blood and gore, that he will be pleased and he will return, at which point all the Jews and Muslims will have their throats cut by Jesus's mighty army of Christian soldiers. So this is the insanity that's going on. The people who believe that now control the United States Air Force. The people who control the United States Air Force also control nuclear weapons. And we're worried about Pakistan? We're worried about Muslim fundamentalists in Pakistan? Jesus Christ, how many nukes do they have? 7? 9? How many do we have? 9,000? Minot Air Force Base, I really believe if Armageddon is triggered, it'll start there. Glenn Beck goes bonkers once again. And I know I want to stay away from this, but this rotten son of a bitch, if you're Jewish and you listen to this program, I hope you're going to do something about this. I really do. He compares the suffering of Fox News employees after the Democrats and the White House has labeled Fox News as nothing more than a propaganda channel. Beck says that the suffering of Fox News employees because of those statements is the same as what the Jews suffered during the Holocaust. If you're Jewish, for God's sake, will you send a letter to Fox News? Do something!
When they're done with Fox, and you decide to speak out on something, the old, first they came for the Jews and I wasn't Jewish, when you have a question and you believe that something should be asked, They're A, totally fine with you right now. They have no problem with you.
Son of a bitch is sick.
When they're done with Fox and talk radio, do you really think they're going to leave you alone if you want to ask a tough question? Do you really think that a man who has never had to stand against tough questions and has as much power as he does, do you really believe after he takes out the number one news network, do you really think that this man is then not going to turn on you, that you, in your little organization, is going to cause him any hesitation at all not to take you out? If you believe that, you should open up a history book.
Why?
Because you've missed the point of many brutal dictators.
Like Hitler.
You miss the point on how they always start.
They start with the Jews, don't they, Glenn? Now, this is a guy whose religion digs around into death notices and finds people they supposed to be Jewish because of their names, perhaps, and after they are dead, it goes through some kind of Mormon craziness that converts the soul of the dead Jew by baptizing it, so that that soul of the dead Jew is now safely ensconced in this Mormon hellhole that they call, what, heaven? Glenn Beck and his religion does this to Jews, and then this son of a bitch has the audacity to compare a statement of fact from the Obama White House that Fox News is nothing but a propaganda arm, and then gets his little bloomers in a wad? This ass who insists that Obama is not an American citizen, who insists he's the Antichrist, all this stuff, and he wonders, and then he draws an analogy between what Pastor Niemöller said about first they came for the Jews, and I didn't, well, not first, but last, as a matter of fact, but I didn't do anything because I wasn't Jewish? Oh, my God! If you're a member of a temple, a congregation, what are you going to do about this? Nothing?
Words, weapons, sharpened knives, makes you wonder how the other half died. The other half died. Makes you wonder, a little wonder. But you come.
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It's about 10 before the hour. The Republicans are truly insane. This party has devolved into a septic tank of the worst of human waste. It really has. In referencing the Republican Party to traditional fascism, there is no historical problem in my doing that. And anyone who is familiar with fascism, or as Mussolini called it, corporatism, we'll see the absolute parallels and the absolute direction similar to fascism that the Republican Party is attempting and succeeding in taking this country. So when they use the term, when the Republicans or a sick person like Glenn Beck uses Nazi references, it is it's a combination of victimhood and projection and wanting to confuse and knowing their audience, that their audience is completely brain dead and incapable of understanding any kind of historical reference other than what's fed to them by Fox. Having said all that, the Republicans, this is from Haaretz, the newspaper in Israel, the Republicans have once again recruited Hitler to their campaign against the reforms initiated by their Democratic rivals. The National Republican Congressional Committee, this is according to Haaretz, used a popular online social network this week to promote a video in which Hitler appears to endorse House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Using the website Twitter, the NRCC posted a link to a video with the message, "Funny video, moon battery, Hitler reacts to Obamacare maneuvers." In the clip, phony subtitles attached to a scene from the 2004 Hitler biopic, The Downfall, or Der Untergang, appear to have Hitler praising Pelosi and voicing disappointment with U.S. President Barack Obama's revisions to his socialized medicine plan. According to Haaretz, Democrats, especially Jewish Democrats, did not find this at all amusing. Making the video, of course, is easy. It's a common pastime for Internet users to play around with the subtitles of a particular clip. Dozens of videos using a clip from the original film have been posted online with subtitles discussing a wide range of topics. In the Republican video, Hitler becomes angered, screaming, quote, "What the hell are the Democrats doing?" And then the Hitler image says, "At least I have Pelosi on my side. What's wrong with them? I socialized medicine overnight and everything's going great. Like Pelosi, I don't give a blank about the American people." It's astonishing. The president of the National Jewish Democratic Committee, David Harris, told Haaretz that the Republicans' use of Nazi symbols in campaigns against Democrats has crossed the line. David Harris said it has to stop. Harris went on to say, "We've tracked at least 40 examples of the use of Holocaust analogies and this deeply offensive portrayal of the Democratic Party leadership as Nazis by prominent Republican figures. This rhetoric reached unprecedented levels of bad taste, like the recent program that shows Speaker Pelosi and Hitler as buddies." Harris added, quote, "In their apology, Republican National Campaign or Congressional Committee spokesman said that they thought it was funny. For most people I know," Harris said, "not only Holocaust survivors and Jews, it doesn't seem funny. If they think it's funny, they just don't get it. This sort of comparison is not acceptable. It's profoundly offensive, and it has to stop." I don't know anymore. I've run out of curse words. I've run out of over-the-top comments about these sons of bitches, and it doesn't make any difference who criticizes them. Politicians, artists, journalists, foreign affairs editors, television networks, real ones, newspapers around the world can point out that the Republican Party has become a sick collection of they're not conservatives. They're not Republicans in the sense that most of us are familiar with Republicans from 15, 20, 30 years ago, but has become instead a destructive terror organization that is determined to destroy the America that we know and that they claim to respect. They don't respect America. They hate this country. They are almost sexually aroused at the thought of a kind of totalitarian corporatism being replacing whatever little shards and shreds of democracy or representative government we still have here. It's unbelievable, and yet they continue. Nothing. They can't be shamed. The pig man, the suicider, crazy eyes Malkin, they can't be shamed into stopping. You get some mind-boggling psychopath like Charles Krauthammer, who should know better. My God, isn't he a doctor? Isn't he is he a, it's just, I don't have words for it. Nothing will stop these people. O'Reilly, the rest of these thugs, nothing will stop them. They don't care. There's no shame. There's no sense of responsibility. They are totally amoral. They have no ethical center. Nothing. I've never seen a group of people like this. They're beyond cult. They're beyond completely and totally destructive. I don't know what they are. But I still maintain that they have to be removed from public discourse. They have to be. And I don't know how to do that. But these people have to be removed or the country is doomed. No. Don't give me First Amendment stuff. Not about this. No, there are restrictions on speech. There always have been. There always have been restrictions on speech. You know, if I approach you here in Georgia and call you a filthy son of a bitch, you can pull out a gun and kill me, and that becomes your defense because of what I said. And you will probably be acquitted. So don't give me that. What these people are doing is anti-freedom, pro-totalitarian. It's fascism in its most grubby, degenerate form. And they continue. There's no way to stop them.
Former police chief.
It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. Do we have any Trekkies in the house? Let me see a show of hands. Anybody out there? Anybody out there who might have an interest in
Trekkers?
Who might have an interest in? I don't know if you're called Trekkies or Trekkers, but I always call you Trekkies. Any fans of Star Trek? Let me see. Oh, my God. Millions of hands are going up. Well, do you remember Lieutenant Uhura? I'm sure you do. That was Nichelle Nichols. She joins us now from, I guess, from California. Is that right, Nichelle?
Exactly. And all hailing frequencies are now open.
I figured you were going to do something like that. Nice to talk with you. I was an early fan. I was a fan of Star Trek before being a fan of Star Trek was cool. No, somebody else said something like that. But I want the audience to know that your career is certainly more than Star Trek, 40 years in film, television, music, and stage. And the reason we have Nichelle Nichols on tonight is a movie that's being released, a film that's being released October 20th. I had the... I don't want to say pleasure of watching it because it's scary as hell, but I watched this on DVD a couple of weeks ago. It's called The Torturer. In this film, Nichelle Nichols plays the part of a therapist, a clinical psychiatrist who is who's tasked with saving the mind of an interrogator who returns from Iraq with PTSD, which we've talked about in this program many times. What prompted you to make the film, to do this?
Well, I came to be acquainted with the writer who sent me the script through friends,
mm-hmm.
because I don't usually take unsolicited scripts. He sent it to me. And said, I want you to play the role of Doc. it really is a three-character play.
Right.
It's brilliantly written. By the time I finished reading it, I knew I had to play this role.
Mm-hmm.
And so in time, we talked, and then we had a... He flew out to, from Atlanta to Los Angeles to my home, and we met. And while he was here, he had spoken with, I think, only two other people, one for each of the other roles, and he was quite happy with them. They met at my home.
Mm-hmm.
We had a read-through. And from the original read-through, I knew exactly who these people were, and I knew exactly who my character was.
Mm-hmm.
And the first whole read-through was bone-chilling. And that was the beginning, and we were committed to it, each of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there comes a time every once in a while when you feel not only the soul of the script, but you feel the soul of the people
mm-hmm.
who you're about to join this incredible journey.
Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, in watching the film, excuse me, especially during the first part, one of the things that impressed me about your character and how you handled that character was the intensity.
Yes.
Because in your eyes, and there's no histrionics. I mean, I don't think you barely move, but it's in your eyes when I guess it's Andrew Walker who plays the part of the interrogator.
Yes.
Who comes back from Vietnam comes back from Iraq,
yes.
Eaten up with PTSD. And, as we watched this DVD, it was so different, obviously, from what I'm used to connecting Nichelle Nichols to. And I have to tell you, in the bit of drama that I've done, the idea of not throwing away your energy, of just remaining in the character, you certainly got that across. I also understand
yes.
you were able to shoot in an actual government detention facility. Is that
exactly?
That must have been just a tad freaky.
That was in Colorado. What was chilling about it was the office. This exquisite office that I Dr. Darnell's.
Mm-hmm.
That was my office with beautiful African statuary.
Right.
You know, it's a very and a beautiful, warm, lovely office that was part of that facility.
Mm-hmm.
That superimposed on that, which was not in the original office, was a picture of the President George Bush.
I saw that.
In my back.
Yeah, that was very. It came very
and
through.
The juxtaposition to that was, in days they took us down to where the detention center was, and it was chilling.
Mm-hmm.
It was chilling.
Well, that's another thing. In the beginning of the movie, when I'm not giving away any of the plot here, but
yes.
when the woman is being questioned, well, I just gave away a bit of the
yes.
plot. But when the person is being questioned,
yes.
after the back and forth from what in the film is the present. Back to in the film, the days of interrogation when this interrogator was doing this, I have to tell you, I started to get I won't say nauseous, but
yes.
but a feeling of vertigo from watching what was happening
mm-hmm.
to this person being interrogated, And it was just too scary. Now, we talk about this. I have talked about this on my program many, many times about Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and all these different places that most Americans, including myself, don't know where they exist. This American gulag that is used to extract information by torturing. And I have to tell you, Nichelle, this was a I got the feeling I was watching a documentary a couple of times. It was...
You have hit on it because that's what I was saying at the beginning, Mike, is that it was so true. The point, the beauty of it is there's not just this military interrogator interrogating what is obviously, supposedly to him, a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
But this young man believes what he is doing is God's work.
Mm-hmm.
This is after 9/11, and he has been convinced that he is working in the name of national security.
Right.
And he was taught to go overseas and do these terrible things to prisoners in the name of God and country and national security and mm-hmm. the 3,000 people who lost their lives in that terrible terrorist. And he's got to come to grips, which he does not even really aware
mm-hmm.
that he's suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And when he comes apart and is having these problems. In between that, he has been referred to this clinical psychiatrist.
Right.
Which is the role that I play.
Nichelle, we have a break coming here, but when we come back from this break, I want to ask you, I'll ask you now, maybe you can give us an idea of how aware you were, both personally and politically, of what had been going on during the 8 years of the Bush regime, and how that had an influence on your character. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back right after this break. We're talking with Nichelle Nichols, and October 20th, the DVD will be out. You can get it at Blockbuster or Netflix. It's called The Torturer. You've got to see this. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
And sometimes I can't see you.
This is the Malloy Program. We're talking with Nichelle Nichols, whose career spans more than 40 years in film, television, music, and stage. Most of us know her, though, and remember her as Lieutenant Uhura on Star Trek. She is currently one of the actors in the film The Torturers, or The Torturer, that is coming out October 20th. It'll be available at all major retailers online and at Blockbuster and Netflix. And it certainly gets a recommendation from me, having seen it. Be prepared to feel a little bit claustrophobic and maybe a little bit spooky as this thing unwinds. And Nichelle Nichols' character is a psychiatrist, a clinical psychiatrist, whose job is to unravel an interrogator who returns from Iraq with PTSD. The involvement, Nichelle, of you personally and or politically where it concerns these issues that we found ourselves involved in as a country under Bush and Cheney, how did you sort through all that?
I think it was the core reason for my wanting to be involved in it. To all intents and purposes, the young man, this young military man,
mm-hmm.
Is doing what he is supposed to do.
right.
being trained to do.
Right.
It goes against the grain of everything that we have been taught as citizens of this great country.
Mm-hmm.
It violates your senses, and somewhere within there, because he was a young religious person, too.
Right.
He believed in God and country and the goodness of the United States of America, and here he is doing something that violates all the tenets of both his religion and his pledge of allegiance to the United States that we make with such pride. I believe, you see, first you must understand, I believe in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that violates what I grew up believing in and knowing I am an equal human being, no matter what I am facing, I know that this country stands for the highest good in humankind. And so, in all of us. And so, when I learned of when I learned of activity that was going on and condoned by my country,
mm-hmm.
to people, whether they were whether they were terrorists or not, whether they were over there or over here, we've got to get them over there before they come over here. You know, Bush is great. If it's not right in one case, it's not right in another.
Mm-hmm.
We do not torture people. We do not waterboard people. We do not castrate and castigate people. If we have them, if they're criminals against us, we put them in jail. We do that. That's where we're there fighting for, dying for, killing for, when need be, to protect this country, because this country has always felt represented the highest level of decency. And what this movie portrays is what really happened to our young men and women in the name of revenge of what happened at 9/11. And if that's okay, then it's okay to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to rape and plunder and steal and anything else. And it's not okay. It is not okay. That is not who we are. And I believe this young man in his soul had to have known that, or he would not have been in the position that he was in now that he's home.
Mm-hmm.
and needing the care of a clinical psychiatrist.
Well, I, and also, Nichelle, we're just about out of time here, but I think in the real world,
yes.
There are so many men just like the character played by Andrew Walker.
Yes, brilliantly played.
Yeah, whether they were interrogators or not, the fact that they were led to believe that they were involved in war for a certain objective, and then to find out that that's not true.
Yeah.
The name
and
of the film
to be ennobled, this indecency, the sheer weight of the indecency.
That's true.
Of the kind of torture that we inflicted.
Well, and
people that we didn't even know over there, if they were indeed guilty.
That's true. Nichelle Nichols, thank you.
That is not what we do to other human beings.
I hear you loud and clear. Nichelle, we've got to leave it there. Thank you very much. I appreciate your taking time to talk with us. We'll be right back.
Ask yourself this question over
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Your inner liberal warrior. It's 26 before the hour. I really do recommend this from a weird point of view, from strictly a political point of view, this film, The Torture, if you get a chance. I hated to end the interview that quickly, but the tyranny of the clock when you're in radio, we don't have any leeway. The Torture, and it stars Nichelle Nichols, Andrew Walker, and Masa Masoudi. So if you get a chance, right? It'll be available from Netflix and online the 20th of this month. Email here from, I don't know from who. Subject line, want to get rid of Beck? Because we you know, Beck is now comparing the very clear and honest assessment of Fox News as nothing more than a propaganda channel. He's comparing that as that supposed attack. It's not. It's defining Fox Channel, not attacking it. It's just simply defining it. He's comparing that to the move on the Jews in Germany in the 20s and 30s. And were I Jewish, I would find that so outrageous, I would do something. And there is something you can do, because the Church of Latter-day Saints, of which this freak belongs or claims he belongs, I don't know, I really don't care. I'm not surprised he belongs to a cult-like organization, which is what I consider LDS Church to be. But he, that's the church that goes after the souls, if you will, of dead Jews and baptizes them in the name of Jesus Christ, and to the point where several Jewish organizations have petitioned the LDS Church to goddamn stop it, in a manner of speaking, right? But a cult like LDS knows no boundaries. I mean, they will do whatever they will do, just like the Republican Party, which has now become a cult. Well, I got this email. Want to get rid of Beck? And the answer is, get the message to the LDS Church that Beck is making Mormons look bad. The LDS Church has the power to remove him. And will, if they think the bad publicity he brings will dry up their new tithing converts. Here's an example. Dear Mormon Church, thanks for letting us see your true heart of darkness. Beck has shown us how evil your church beliefs are. Sincerely, the rest of society. So there you go. That's a good idea. Let the you know, the LDS Church, which, like most of these organizations, is a fraud, a scam, a myth, and a cult. They don't like to be interfered with. And when you have somebody like Beck, who, if people respond to this idea and generating negative publicity for this cult, then the cult will do everything it can to stop Beck. Just an idea. Shepard Smith, I want you to hear some sound. Shepard Smith the other day had this freak, Senator John Barrasso, Republican of Wyoming, on his afternoon program. And this is not the first time that the Fox anchor Shepard Smith has gone off message. You have to wonder how many more times he'll be allowed to get away with this. I don't know. Maybe Fox keeps him around as some kind of proof they're not really the propaganda wing of the Republican Party. I don't know. But anyway, you know, first, remember he went astray during Katrina when he pointed out that people were dying and the Bush crime family wasn't doing anything about it. Then he spoke out against indefinite detention of detainees. And then, remember, he famously said, "This is America. We don't effing torture." Remember that? And went over the air when he didn't know the cameras were still rolling and he was speaking out against Cheney's policies in the Mideast. That's when he said it. "This is America. We don't effing torture." He also expressed some serious concern about the hateful and frightening, his word, frightening rhetoric he reads in his official Fox inbox against Obama, you know, emails from people that he worried were, quote, armed up and dangerous, his words, end quote. Okay, yesterday he took on Senator John Barrasso. Is that his name? All right. Senator John Barrasso, I don't know. It looks like bare ass to me. But anyway, Senator John Barrasso, Republican of Wyoming, on the myth that a public option in health care would be tantamount to government-run health care. As you listen to this, we got two clips. Keep in mind, Shepard Smith better watch out. He'll be picked up by MSNBC at this rate.
Why would we not want a public option?
Look, let's take a look at what we do know. My concern is a public, or what I consider a government takeover of health care.
Well,
is going to make it very challenging.
But it's not a government takeover, Senator. That's not fair, and we both know it. It's not a government takeover, because what it would be is a government option. If you have insurance now and you like it, you can keep it. If you want the government option, a government-run, paid for by those who buy it, government-run option to try to keep costs down. Over the last 10 years, health care costs in America have skyrocketed. Regular folks cannot afford it. So they tax the system by not getting preventative medicine. They go to the emergency room and are at a last case, and we all end up paying for it. As the costs have gone up, the insurance industry's profits, on average, have gone up more than 350%. And it's the insurance companies which have paid and have contributed to senators and congressmen on both sides of the aisle to the point where now we can't get what all concerned on Capitol Hill seem to blink and what more than 60% of Americans say they support is a public option. This has been an enormous win for the healthcare industry. That is an unquestioned fact.
Wow. Some bitch. That's Shepard Smith. That's coming out of the mouth of somebody on the Fox propaganda channel. But that's not all. Now, I want you to listen to the back and forth between Senator Barrasso and Shepard Smith. Here we go.
But I wonder what happens for the American people when we come out with legislation now, which requires everyone to have health care insurance, or many more people, but does not give a public option. Therefore, millions more people will have to buy insurance from the very corporations that are overcharging us and whose profits have gone up 350% in the last 10 years. It seems like we, the people, are the ones who are getting the shaft here.
And we're not even allowing the people of America to read the bill and know what it costs. You're absolutely right. I'm not going to defend the insurance companies.
Yeah.
I've been fighting them
but
for the last 25 years of practicing medicine.
But with every vote against the public option is a vote for the insurance companies, sir.
No,
it
it's
is.
Not. No, I disagree with you.
How
well,
can
I disagree
you disagree with that.
That?
It is the public option which would keep costs in check, which would keep prices in check, which would stop the big corporations, which have made 350% improvements in their profits over the last 10 years. A public option would stop it. What else would stop it?
I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all, and that's why they can't even get the 60 votes, as Senator Baucus said, for it. Washington is incapable of dealing with the waste and the fraud and the abuse in the system. And you're going to see more of that. The more government takeover you have, the more Washington runs the system, the worse it's going to be for the American people.
I want to make clear, this wouldn't be Washington running the system, Senator. It would be a government-run plan. Paid for by the
well,
people
a Washington
who sign
run
up
plan.
For the plan. Yes. Paid for by
the
people who sign
people?
Up for the plan. A not-for-profit to try to keep health care costs down. And that's what, in recent polls, more than 60% of Americans say they favor.
Do you see the hopelessness here? When you have a freak, an absolute piece of human waste, like this Senator Barrasso, John Barrasso, a Republican of Wyoming, Shepard Smith is not doing brain surgery on this rat bastard. He is laying it out in very simple terms. As a matter of fact, short, concise sentences which speak the truth, which you never hear ever, ever, ever on Fox. Shepard Smith put more factual statements together there, and more of a challenge to this piece of corporate dreck than 10 of his comrades on the Fox channel. It's astonishing. And this rat bastard senator from Wyoming, this Republican from Wyoming, when he realizes that he's he's in an adversarial position with, oh my God, a Fox person? How could this be? This is Fox. I'm a shill for the corporations. I'm a senator, Republican senator. I don't give a goddamn about America or the people or healthcare. The only thing I care a goddamn about is profits for the healthcare industry. What is this person doing on Fox News? He's challenging me. Whoops. So when that happens, what does this piece of human waste, the senator from Wyoming, do? He falls back into the talking points. He falls back into the Republican talking points. Oh, my God. He says, you know, I don't believe that at all, and that's why they can't even get the 60 votes that Senator Baucus had for it. Washington's incapable of dealing with the waste and the fraud and the abuse in the system. Yaddy, 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 yaddy. It's a Washington-run plan. Ah, government is bad. Government sucks. And Shepard Smith makes it very, very clear. He says, why would the American people want to continue with a system that has ripped us all off, you know, without a public option? Boy, I don't know. This Shepard Smith, I hope somebody creates an opening for him at a different network, because you and I both know that he's not going to be at the Fox propaganda channel too much longer. Not with that kind of honesty.
Be an idiot, act lame, stay ignorant, be remedial, wear the dunce cap, slouch over and drool like a hunchback. Don't discuss things, shout the last word, put your good sense out the pasture. Drop your IQ, that's what I do. My advice to girls and guys who want to be a Nobel Prize finalist. Rocket scientists, try applying this. Keep the customers coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down. Oh, dumb.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. Oh, by the way, some breaking news here. Robert Wexler, U.S. Representative, Democrat of Boca Raton, Florida, is quitting. He's expected to make a public statement tomorrow morning about 10 a.m. at his office in Boca Raton, Florida. He's self-described, he calls himself a fire-breathing liberal, which he is not. He is mildly progressive on certain issues, but remember, the left has been pulled so far to the right here lately. The center is where the John Birch Society used to be. But anyway, Wexler does have a D after his name, and he does vote for the most part with the Democratic caucus. It's not known, according to this is in the Miami Herald, it's not known what his plans are. But he's bailing out. Once his resignation becomes official, state law requires the governor, the Republican Governor Chris, to call a special election. Anyway, so just thought you might want to know tomorrow morning this announcement, or this press conference will be held. Doctors in Iraq are recording a sharp rise in the number of cancer victims south of Baghdad. We're talking about Iraqis here. Sufferers in the province of Babil have risen almost tenfold in 3 years. 10 times as many now as there was 3 years ago. Cancer. The cause appears to be depleted uranium from U.S. military equipment used in the 2003 invasion. 500 cases of cancer were diagnosed in 2004. The figure rose to almost 1,000 2 years later. 2008, the number of cases are up to 7,000. This year, there have been so far more than 9,000, and the number's rising. Iraqi researchers believe radiation is responsible for the increase in cancer and birth defects in the country. He said the report says, or researchers say, the U.S. and British militaries have sent mixed signals about the effects of depleted uranium. A British scientist, Christopher Busby, an activist who has carried out research into the risks of radioactive pollution, said there is proof of a definitive link between cancer and depleted uranium. He told Al Jazeera, quote, I made this link to a coroner's inquest in the West Midlands in England into the death of a Gulf War I veteran, and a coroner's jury accepted my evidence. It's been found by a coroner's court that cancer was caused by an exposure to depleted uranium. He went on to say, in the last 10 years, research has emerged that has made it quite clear that uranium is one of the most dangerous substances known to man, certainly in the form that it takes when used in these wars. So here is even more destruction caused by American imperialism, corporatism, in this particular case, directly responsible for this murder and slaughter and cancer is Dick Cheney and George Bush, of course, and the foreign policy people who set this up, Paul Wolfowitz among them, Donald Rumsfeld. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. A tenfold increase in just 3 years of cancer diagnoses because of depleted uranium. Son of a bitch. You know, I've said this before in this program. How does this country ever regain, if we ever had it, any sort of moral justification for our very existence? How do we do that? How do we do that? This country really has been a murderous enterprise ever since the very beginning, haven't we? Jesus God, there were attempts, I think there were attempts by righteous people in the past 235 years to kind of acknowledge the wrongs that we've done by legislative acts. But for every wrong that we attempt to address and make right on, we commit more wrongs. It's just astonishing to me. How does the United States ever? And when I say United States, I mean all of us. I'm not talking about the documents. I'm not talking about the physical boundaries. How does this country, how do our leadership and us, how do we ever get to the point where we can declare ourselves to be moral? That we can declare ourselves to be justified in what we do here at home and abroad. I mean, how do we get to that? I frankly think never. I really do. And now, at the risk of hedging, which I'm not trying to do here, but I want to make this clear. It's not just America bashing. I think there are other countries who are equally incapable of moral action, of moral certitude, of moral imperative. But In a sense, that's their responsibility. Our responsibility is right here, within these borders, in this society. But my God, you know, yesterday when I just started out by reading that entire thing about Columbus Day, was that yesterday or was it the day before? Was it yesterday? I mean, it's one thing to lie to ourselves stay just deeply enmeshed in denial. Sometimes that's, you know, I've said before, that's very necessary. It's a great survival mechanism, if not just a defense mechanism. But in order to make any claim whatsoever to moral leadership, global moral leadership or ethical conduct or justice, how are we going to clean the slate? And the answer is we can't. We can't clean the slate. The only thing I think we could do is to stop what we're doing. Just stop it. Stop the slaughter. Stop killing. Stop seeding other countries with depleted uranium. Stop killing their people. Stop killing our own people. You think we can do that? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Michael back at 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. If you are just joining us, where in the hell you been for the past 2 hours? Oh, my goodness. You missed a conversation with Lieutenant Uhuru and all sorts of fun and frivolity. But right now, we are going to have, once again, a report from our Education Affairs correspondent, Kay Petrini, that we call Kay's Report Card. Slowly go by and feed them on your dreams. The one they pick. Kay writes, "Hi, Mike. In World History last week, we started our unit on the Enlightenment. The first activity is a presentation of Thomas Hobbes' Leviathan, which walks students through the main ideas of the book. A key passage reads, quote, according to Hobbes, human beings drew up a social contract. The people ceded all sovereignty to a single person in exchange for security from each other and from foreign invaders. The single ruler, an absolute monarch or a dictator, would control the violent and selfish impulses of individual members in a society through brute force. Individuals would lose their liberty, but they would gain security and community," end quote. As we go through the material, we have a running question and answer session that sounds something like this. How do leaders come to power in this country? We elect them. Who are we? Lots of eye rolling here as if to say, duh, Miss Petrini. Who are we? We're the people. How does a dictator come to power? He takes it by brute force. He makes people hella scared. Very scared. Well, what about dictators like Hitler who didn't use force? People look the other way, or they willingly gave him power. Why would people do that? What did they think they are getting out of that deal? People give up their freedom to the ruler so he will give them security and protection. Next, students are introduced to the major philosophers of the Enlightenment. Rousseau, Montesquieu, I'm sorry, I have new glasses. Montesquieu, Voltaire, and Locke. The whole point of learning about Hobbes first is to give students a reference point from which to evaluate the democratic ideas of the Enlightenment. Hobbes is supposed to provide a point of contrast as we outline the difference between absolute monarchies or dictatorships and democracies. For the former, the dictatorships, we use examples, or absolute monarchies, we use examples like King Louis XIV and 20th century European dictators. For the latter, democracies, we refer to the United States. As I listen to the students make their final presentations on their assigned philosopher, I almost always feel confident they have learned the material well and even have fun in the process. At this point, I should be able to go home feeling satisfied that the kids and I accomplished what we had set out to do. Not so fast. There's another side to this lesson, one that my students never see. It involves a parallel dialogue that takes place in my head and goes like this. How do leaders come to power in this country? We elect them? Well, the corporations who bankroll their campaigns get them elected, so they have our leaders in their back pockets. We elect them? Are you kidding? How did George W. Bush come to power? Through purging voter rolls, election fraud, and the consent of his father's friends on the Supreme Court. In other words, he just took it. How did he get away with doing that? The American people looked the other way. Twice. Well, what did people think they were getting out of the deal, especially after 9/11? They gave up their liberty in exchange for protection and security from so-called foreign invaders. Why would the Obama administration continue so many of the policies of the Bush administration? Because during the 8 years of the Bush administration, the United States ceased to be a democratic republic. It moved in the direction of becoming a fascist state without citizens even realizing it. I do not think Obama is a fascist, Kay writes, but he is continuing key policies of the Bush administration, including the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and holding detainees without granting them the right of habeas corpus. How did we get here? As I was trying to figure this out, yet again, I came across a paper by G.M. Tamás, a research professor at the Hungarian Academy of the Sciences in Budapest. Tamás writes, quote, before the Enlightenment, citizenship was a privilege. Once citizenship became equated with human dignity, its extension to all was only a matter of time. For the liberal, social, democratic, and other assorted progressive heirs of the Enlightenment, progress meant universal citizenship, that is, a virtual equality of political condition, a virtually equal say for all in the common affairs of any given community, together with a social condition and a model of rationality that could make it possible. The work of enlightenment is irretrievably lost and has been replaced by post-fascism. Post-fascism finds its niche easily in the new world of global capitalism without upsetting the dominant political forms of electoral democracy and representative government. It does what I consider to be central to all varieties of fascism. Sans Führer, sans one-party rule, sans SA or SS, post-fascism reverses the Enlightenment tendency to assimilate citizenship to the human condition. Post-fascism does not need stormtroopers and dictators. It is perfectly compatible with an anti-Enlightenment liberal democracy that redefines citizenship as a grant from a sovereign instead of a universal human right. End quote. G.M. Tomas. Like all working American, like all working Americans, teachers have to juggle a lot. Lesson planning, grading papers, classroom instruction, student discipline, etc. But these days I find that most of the juggling is going on inside of my head as I continually try to reconcile the curriculum I am supposed to teach with the reality of post-Bush Cheney post-fascist America.
Teach K. Children well, 'cause their father's hell did slowly go by.
A report card from this program's education affairs correspondent, Kay Petrini. Not brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling.
The one you know by.
Exquisite writers who contribute to this program. I've got a postscript here, a different email that came in from Kay today that I want to share with you. It's not a report card piece, but it bears sharing on the program. And also, this who sent me this? Nora sent me this, I believe. How the oligarchy guarantees its war profits. The British MI5 funded Mussolini to promote World War I. This is documents reveal the Italian dictator got started in politics in 1917 with the help of £100 in weekly wage from the British intelligence agency MI5. And for them, it must have seemed like a good investment. Mussolini, then a 34-year-old journalist, was not just willing to ensure Italy continued to fight alongside the Allies in the First World War by publishing propaganda in his paper. He was also willing to send in the boys to, quote, persuade, end quote, peace protesters to stay at home. Cambridge historian Peter Martland, who discovered details of the deal struck with the future dictator, said, quote, Britain's least reliable ally in the war at the time was Italy after revolutionary Russia's pullout from the conflict. Mussolini was paid £100 a week from the autumn of 1917 for at least a year to keep up the pro-war campaigning, equivalent to about £6,000 a week today. As well as keeping the presses rolling at Il Popolo d'Italia, the newspaper he edited, Mussolini also said he would send Italian army veterans to beat up peace protesters in Milan, a dry run for his fascist black shirt units that were to come later. This is from The Guardian of the UK in today's news. Today's newspaper. If you want that, go to theguardian.co.uk. And just look up recruited by MI5. Oh, my goodness. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Fears too.
here.
21 past the hour. According to the Miami Herald, soon-to-be former Democratic congressman from Florida, Robert Wexler, will become the director of something called the Center for Middle East Peace and Economic Cooperation. The Center for Middle East Peace and Economic Cooperation. That'll be interesting. Wexler is a self-described Zionist. And any organization that has the title of Center for Middle East Peace and Economic Cooperation, I immediately wonder how many Arabs or Palestinians or Syrians or Iraqis or, you know, people like that are involved. Okay. I want to share this with you. Kay Wright, Mike, hi, Mike. In the Truth Out piece you read on the air last night, that was the bit about Columbus Day. The authors ask how it's possible for the idea of American global domination to be accepted as policy and remain unquestioned by almost our entire population. Their answer, quote, the one word key to that is myths. The explanation is that the myths the United States is built upon have paved the way for the perpetuation of all manner of violations. Among the first of these is that of Christopher Columbus, end quote. On Overman's program last night, Kay writes, Lawrence O'Donnell showed a clip from Fox News Sunday in which Liz Cheney commented on President Obama's winning of the Nobel Peace Prize. This is what she said, quote, the president himself understands he didn't earn this prize. What he ought to do, frankly, is send the mother of a fallen American soldier to accept the prize on behalf of the U.S. military. That would be a reminder to the Nobel Committee that each one of them sleeps soundly at night because of the U.S. armed forces, because the U.S. military is the greatest peacekeeping force in the world today. What the committee believes is they'd like to live in a world in which America is not dominant. And I think if you look at the language of the citation, you can see that they talk about President Obama ruling in a way that makes sense to the majority of the people of the world. Americans don't elect a president to do that. We elect a president to defend our national interest. They may believe that President Obama doesn't believe in American dominance, and they may have been trying to affirm that belief with the prize. I think, unfortunately, they may be right, and I think it's a concern, end quote. And there you have it, Kay writes, a perfect example of how the myth of American exceptionalism rationalizes the relentless drive for conquest. Back in the day, it was manifest destiny. And imperialism. Today, the objective is so-called full-spectrum dominance of the globe. On a more positive note, we had discussions in all of my classes today about Columbus Day. It was encouraging to see that my students seemed to have learned something from the Columbus exercise I had them do earlier in the year. This was the assignment which I had them compare and contrast three different historical sources on the subject. A few students argued that Columbus's seafaring prowess could still be honored yet there were also an acknowledgement of the atrocities that ensued. Most students advocated that the holiday be renamed Indigenous Peoples Day. And several argued that the observance should be done away with completely. I was just happy to see that the kids had thought about the subject, something that is impossible when students are taught American mythology instead of American history. I'll bet I know which of those two Liz Cheney studied. Okay. Yeah. For sure. John is in Diamond Bar, California. Is that right?
Yeah, I've talked to you before, Mike. I'm the lawyer.
Oh, hey, John.
Hey, listen, you've been talking a lot about the public option. It hit me like a ton of bricks this week. I can't believe it took me so long. California has had the public option in workers' compensation for 80 or 90 years. They are just kicking butt over all the private insurance carriers. It's mandatory in this state, like most states, maybe all states in this country, that employers must have workers' compensation insurance. So they founded this company with salesmen and everything to make sure that everybody can have insurance if they're turned down by private insurance carriers. They have now 50% of the business. They have the most capital. They're the most generous when it comes to settlements, I know, because I've...
Well, no, wait, you say public option. You mean it's run by the state of California?
Yeah, there's no
money. But I thought the state of California was bankrupt.
No, no.
All right, well, then why...
They're paid by the employer. They're the option.
Why aren't Democrats pointing this out?
I don't know why. I didn't point it out. I'm telling you, Mike, the premiums are the lowest. I've had my own business. They're my insurance carrier. They've paid some pretty big claims on my little bitty law office. They're the most generous. My premiums barely went up. The CEO probably makes $200,000 to $400,000 a year.
Hey, hold on a second, John. Let me put you on hold because we got to do a break here, but we'll come back and talk about this a little bit more. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
25 before the hour. All right, we're talking with John in Diamond Bar?
Diamond Bar, California. Diamond Bar, 30 miles east of downtown L.A.
Okay, and about this public option in insurance in California, is this strictly workman's compensation?
Yeah, but most of the money goes for health care. Sure, there's other benefits, but I'd say over half the money goes for health care.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a health care company. It's 70 to 80 years old. It was created by the legislature to make sure that every employer has insurance.
Mm-hmm.
They have salespeople. The people that work there, because I know I've worked there myself 30 years ago, they get great salaries, they get a pension, they get health insurance. The CEO probably makes $300,000 or $400,000 a year, not much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
They have corralled 50% or more of the business in California in the last 9 years. 20 to 30 carriers, private carriers, have gone under.
Oh, this is obviously what the private insurance industry is terrified about, where it concerns a public option in the health insurance reform plans that are being batted around, right?
If someone would look at this company, when I worked there 35 years ago, I said, my God, where did this company come from? And then I learned the history of it. And I found out it was so well run, and the claims adjusters were very good to the clientele because there was no pressure on them. Of course, we didn't put up with fraud, but it wasn't that much back then. But the point is, it's a great example of the public option really taking care of injured workers in California for probably since 1920.
Well, why? What's your best guess? This is not rhetorical. Why? What's your best guess why this has not been touted by the Democrats?
Look how many other things they've missed. I've missed it. You know,
But John, you're not involved in writing legislation that's going to affect the entire country. And I would think, given the lies and the distortions put out by this dead Republican Party, that any success where it concerns, I'm not saying it's not a profit-oriented company that you're talking about, but that the profits are limited, any success, I would think the Democrats debates in Congress and the White House would be splashing this all over the news. Look, here's how it works, folks.
Well, listen, just do some research on State Compensation Insurance Fund, State of California. And to your listeners out there, I'll bet there may be other public option workers' comp carriers across the country because it's usually mandatory in every state that an employer carries insurance. And the only way to ensure that is to have the public option.
Right.
And I wouldn't be surprised if there's many states that have this. But California's example is unbelievable. I can't believe that it took me so long to realize
this.
I deal with these people all the time. You know, when I get cases, if it's from the State Compensation Insurance Fund, I say, great. We got a great carrier on this case.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, this has got to get out. I can't believe that this public option for 70 or 80 years in California has gone unnoticed.
Don't go
for the red herring that, oh, California's got workers' comp problems and fraud and this and that. That's a different issue. It has absolutely nothing to do with what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, how would it be titled again? What do you call this?
State Compensation Insurance Fund.
State Compensation Insurance Fund. All right. I will do some research and see what is involved there and try to bring it up again. If I do bring it up again, call in.
It's a huge success story. There's one postscript to this. For all the carriers that went under, California has CIGA, California Insurance Guarantee Association. It's another public option which takes over, they have money that everybody has to put into from the carriers. So if they go under, the poor employee does not get caught without benefits. CIGA is well-funded, and they pick up all the people that got hit with the private carriers that go under. So there's really two public options that are huge success stories in California.
Good God. All right, John, that's amazing information. Thanks a lot. I'll do some research tomorrow. We'll talk about this again, all right?
Yeah, listen, if I can't give you my number on the radio, but if I could get back to Kathy, I'll give her my private number if she wants to know more, because I've been involved in this 35 years. I know what I'm talking about.
All right, I'll put you on hold. She'll get the number from you. She may not be able to talk right now, but she'll get a number from you, okay?
Mike, keep up the good work.
Thanks, John. I mean, this is great information from John in Diamond Bar, California. I never heard of that. Never. Oh, my God. Carlos is in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Carlos.
Hey, good evening. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Pretty good. I just wanted to leave a comment, essentially. And I guess that is that before these corporate fascists and fascism in general began wheeling our world around recklessly as if it was some sort of car that daddy gave them.
Yeah.
Or God or whoever and whatever they think. They gave them the right to wield around this world as such.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that this planet was evolving just fine without them. And I think basically what that means in my mind is it was an evolutionary process that essentially reflects cooperation. And when it comes to, you know, this issue of the healthcare issue and you know, working class people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what distinguishes us between from you know, corporate fascism. Essentially, is how I look at it, because it comes down to cooperation and longevity and consistency, and not selling out for, you know, a 3-month turnover on some stock exchange.
Right. Well, I certainly agree with that, Carlos. Capitalism is not about cooperation. Capitalism is about exploitation, purely and simply. Anybody who disagrees with that is either a Fox a television viewer or just an ignorant ass. Capitalism is anti-family. It's anti-life. It is so nationalistic as to be jingoistic until the labor market becomes too expensive to maintain. In other words, until the workers are making money, and then capitalism says, well, let's get out of here and go someplace where we can get the workers for half the price or a third of the price or a tenth of the price or a hundredth of the price. So you certainly get no argument from me, John. Capitalism is not about cooperation. It is about, economic Darwinism. It's about the golden rule. Whoever has the gold makes the rules, and whoever has the gold survives. It's a son of a bitch. I mean, I cannot think of a more predatory system to be developed. If anybody else can think of one, I sure as hell would like to know what it is, than capitalism, a system that is more destructive, not just to the family, not just to a nation state, but destructive to the entire planet. I mean, seriously. Seriously. Now, granted, you know, it started out with a big earth. You know, the oceans are endless. The natural resources are endless. Oh, goody. That meant that capitalism could be truly unbridled, truly allowed to be as predatory as it felt like being, or as the people who wrote it felt like making it. Because capitalism is just a state of mind. I mean, it's not like it's a beast. It is turned into a beast by the people who developed it, designed it, and ride it now. So it's astonishing how willing all of us are to go along with this. And I think the reason is if you're over the age of 35 or 40, you had it drummed into your head that any negative talk about capitalism, it was a zero sum game. Negative talk about capitalism meant positive talk about communist socialism. That was, I mean, for 50 years, that was the name of the game. Here in America, if you did not completely, irrevocably, without exception, support capitalism, you were a fifth columnist. You were a communist sympathizer. You were working to undermine freedom, justice, mom, dad, the family, dog, apple pie, cherry pie, peach cobbler. In other words, you were a traitorous son of a bitch and needed to be shot. And we had lots of people willing to tell us that. Joe McCarthy was one, John Birch Society, and now the Republican Party, which is nothing but, no offense to sex workers, a broken down, toothless whore that is being used by capitalism. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. We're not talking about entrepreneurs here. We're not talking about small businesses. We're not talking about family-run businesses, family farms. We're not talking about families keeping some of the wealth that they develop over multi-generations. What we are talking about is exploitation, the absolute death that is capitalism. We all know this, don't we? Ben Birch, technical advisor, Sharon Gordy, military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, economic affairs, Kay Petrini, education affairs. Our ethics advisors are Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, programs engineer, and executive producer is Kathy Bay. Back to your phone calls. Grant is in Arcata, California, listening on KGOE. Hey, Grant.
book is called The High Walls of Jerusalem by Ronald Sanders.
Uh-huh.
That will explain the Zionist pathology. It is the quintessential book on that matter. And you would...
Well, I wasn't tonight asking about Zionism. I completely understand Zionism.
Well, I didn't, but what I really called about, what that just came up with, is you had mentioned that Nadler down there in Florida.
No, no, it's Wexler, who, right, is resigning from the House of Representatives to take over something called the Middle East Economic and yada yada. And I just had a passing comment that he is self-described as a Zionist, and therefore... anything that he gets involved in that has the word Middle East in it is a little suspect to me.
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah. That's all. I was saying.
If I may make an analogy here, the Republicans kind of remind me of syphilitics in the last stage of the paresis, believing that unprotected sex is the solution.
Say it again.
A bunch of syphilitics, you know, suffering from syphilis.
Right.
And then the third stage, the paresis stage.
Right.
And they're advocating unprotected sex as the solution.
Oh, so you're saying their minds have become rotten and they just want everyone else to die. Well, I don't have any problem with that at all. Not at all. Noah is in San Diego listening on XM. Welcome to the program, Noah.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, I've never listened to your show before, but I just flipped it on and usually listen.
Yeah. I know.
But I heard you say that capitalism isn't the answer in the United States, and that doesn't make any sense. I mean, how are you going to say that a socialist country can create more wealth, more prosperity for Americans? It's proven through history.
All right, you tell me how capitalism is working for America. Go ahead.
It's working for me.
I see. It's working for you. Okay, well then I guess the whole idea of capitalism being a predatory system is invalid because, by God, it works for you. Look, pal, of course it works for certain people. And when I was a kid growing up, it worked for me. That's not the point. And I'm sorry that your ignorance is so deep and so wide. I can't get into a lengthy discussion with you about capitalism being a system that is anti-family, anti-life, anti-worker, anti-union, anti-health, anti-world. I can't address that kind of ignorance, your ignorance. If you want to understand what I'm talking about, for Christ's sake, do your own research. That's all. I mean, something works for you, Jesus. What does that mean? Does that mean that it's a grand, great system? It's a suck system. It is economic Darwinism. If you're at the top of the food chain right now, well, good for you. Good for you. How many people are at the bottom of the food chain so your ass can be at the top? You don't get it, do you? And I'm not going to take the time to explain it to you. I never heard your program before, but I've just, go away. Quick, change your channel. Click, thank you. God. I mean, no matter where you look right now, no matter where you look, you see the failure, the utter failure of capitalism. You can look in this country, you can look anywhere. And this schmuck calls me up and says, well, it's working for me. Socialism never created wealth. Really? Are you sure about that? Are you absolutely sure? What do you mean by so? No, wait. Stop, Malloy. Stop. Let him go. Let him wander around in the darkness. That's the best you can hope for. Whew. Oh, my God. You know, I don't know how many examples of person. This is the part that makes me really, really crazy. Really, really crazy. Is that people who live in this country don't understand the political economic system that has destroyed this country. It's destroyed the financial services industry. It's destroyed the labor force. It has destroyed our ability to make things and export things. It has pushed us so far in debt that we are never going to come out, ever. The only way we'll ever come out is to devalue the dollar down to the point where it's goddamn worthless. And we better do it before the Chinese start cashing in their chips. I mean, this is swirling around people in this country. It's everywhere. That the capitalistic system has utterly and absolutely destroyed us. And it will not be too much longer until we become the equivalent of a third world country. We are almost already there. What do we sell to the rest of the world? Natural resources and our garbage. And the jerkwads who don't have the ability to understand that, to just do some goddamn research and figure it out. If capitalism works for you, well, keep on sucking on that teat as long as you can. Eventually, you're going to be sucking air, and then you're going to get an embolism, and you're going to die. It's so simple. But never mind about the rest of everything else. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
With welcome.